Are you feeling stuck in your business? You became an entrepreneur because you were so passionate and excited about your expertise. But somewhere down the line, you've ended up with a lot of frustration, disappointment, and dissatisfaction. You're working too many hours for too little money and not having a lot of fun. Contact Kate Beaters at katebeaters.com to learn how you can build the business and life you love by having success on your own terms. Contact katebeaters.com today.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Tapping to Success show. This is actually an extra special show because I have an extra special guest today, and I am just so excited. In fact, I was thinking about how I want to introduce him because he's been on my show a few times, and if you've ever heard any of my interviews with him in the past, I mean, you know how highly I regard him and just how thrilled I am to have him on the show. And just to share something, which he doesn't know, is that the first time he ever came on my show, is the only guest I've ever had to do. I'm an expert in tapping, but the only time I've ever had to do any tapping was the first time he came on my show, because he's laughing at the other side, because he impacted my life so greatly. And you know, the first time I ever saw him speak, it was when it hit a video. I think it might have been a YouTube video or something, and they showed it in class. And literally, the class at the end of whatever, however long it was, like 15 minutes or something, everybody got up at the end, they stood up, they gave him a standing ovation, and he wasn't even in the room, and they gave him a standing ovation. And he's just so greatly impacted myself, my life, so many other people. And what it kind of reminds me of is I was attending this event about a month ago, and they said, you know, we had to all go around the room and say who our heroes were. And of course, this man's name was like the top of my list. And so I'm just really, really thrilled to welcome him back. And it's Bruce Lipton. He's a PhD, cell biologist and lecturer. He's an internationally recognized leader in the new biology. And his pioneering research on clone stem cells presaged the revolutionary field of epigenetics, the new science of how environment and perception control genes. And Bruce served on the faculty of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine. And he later performed groundbreaking research at Stanford University School of Medicine. He's the best-selling author of several books, including The Biology of Belief, Spontaneous Evolution, The Honeymoon Effect, and in 2009, he received the prestigious Goy Peace Award, in honor of his scientific contribution to world harmony. And you can always get lots more information about him and where he is speaking if you go to brucelipton.com. So, Bruce, welcome to the show. I'm so thrilled to have you back again.
Kate, I am the one that's really excited. I so love what you do, and I love your enthusiasm, and I really, this is my homage to you, Kate, because your work is so influential in helping people get out of the old rut that they've been in and have an opportunity to experience really the wonderful life that this planet offers. So I thank you for all the work you have done to get to here. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for saying that. I appreciate that. Honestly, you're like in my world, you're just such a hero. So I'm thrilled. I've got lots of really cool questions for you, which I warned you about. But what I just wanted to do is, just because I know we have some first-time listeners who are just getting to hear your message, and I'm wondering if you would just talk a little bit about your journey, and then I've got questions that you're going to love. So they're really great questions. So.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey for myself, because I grew up in the conventional world of science and understood the world through the vision of that science, that we're genetic automatons living in a world of haphazard chance and randomness, and that we're lucky to get through, and we struggle in the Darwinian perception. We struggle for life. That is the whole basis of the Darwinian theory, that there's a survival effort that we have to, keep fighting for our survival and struggling against each other. And that whole kind of belief system of a world somewhat out of control has really switched around because of the research that I was carrying out on stem cells for people, just who have to, understand really what they really represent, is that in our bodies, our cells, we have about 50 trillion cells, and every day we lose hundreds of billions of cells. And it's easy for me to say hundreds of billions, but that's a number that's so fantastic, considering, there's only about 7 billion people on the planet. That means hundreds of billions of cells, that number of people or number of cells, every day are being lost because of aging and trauma. And the issue is you cannot go too long if you don't replace these hundreds of billions of cells every day. And what's replacing them is in our body are stem cells. And what's a stem cell? Well, it's the equivalent of an embryonic cell. Matter of fact, the moment before a person is born, if I did a tissue biopsy and pointed out and I say, oh, here's an embryonic cell, and then a moment later they're born, I do the exact same tissue biopsy and point to the exact same cell. I go, oh, this is called a stem cell. So a stem cell is just a way of saying an embryonic cell in your body after you're born. And we're all filled with them, and they are there to replace enhance our body as we use things. And I was working with them, and my conventional issue was that I was teaching medical students at the same time, and I was teaching them the curriculum that was standard, and that was genetic control, which literally just means control by genes. Which is unfortunate because people have bought into this, and most people believe this, that their lives, their characteristics, their behavior, emotions are influenced by the genes that they received at the moment of conception. And why is this an important insight? And that is, well, as far as we know, we didn't pick the genes, and if we don't like the traits and characteristics, we can't change the genes, then what we're teaching people is a belief of victimization. I'm a victim of my heredity. There's cancer running in my family, Alzheimer's. And when people are perceiving themselves as victims, by definition, they have disempowered themselves, saying, I have no power over my life. Genes have power over my life. And while I was teaching that to medical students, my research on these embryonic-like stem cells revealed a completely different story. It revealed that the stem cell's fate was controlled by the environment in which I put them. So if I created a culture dish and I changed the environment, I changed the fate of the cells. And why that became so important is that the fate of a cell wasn't predetermined in the genes. It was a response to the environment. And why that becomes important is then we look at our biology. We have been claiming, oh, the genes are controlling this. And it turns out, no, it's how we deal with the world around us, how we respond to the events in our lives that determine the fate of our genes. And why this becomes important is, well, we're the ones that control our life experiences, or at least our responses to life experiences. And by controlling that, we control our biology. And all of a sudden it says, well, then we're not talking about victims. We're talking about mastery over our health. So we're beginning to find out very important things like for years, oh, cancer is genetic and cardiovascular disease is genetic or diabetes is genetic. Now we find out that cancer, up to 90% of cancer is lifestyle. 90% or more of cardiovascular disease is lifestyle and how we respond to life. Diabetes, especially type 2, is 100% due to lifestyle. And why this becomes important is we've been programming people for years that all these events are just, that's your fate, live with it. And the new biology says, no, you are a powerful individual, and how you respond to the world can either create the disease or eliminate the disease. And when we give people this new insight, new understanding, then we empower them to take charge of their lives. And all of a sudden you start to see, oh my goodness, we are not the weak, vulnerable beings we've been programmed to be, but we are superheroes to our own selves. And we can create the most wonderful life on this planet with this knowledge. And that's why I so appreciate what you are doing, Kate, because you're helping people get out of an old rut, which has been programming them, and putting them into a new world of options and opportunities. And so this is why I love talking with you and your community, because we can reinforce the empowerment and the creative nature of life. And in fact, as we talked about the last time, my new book, The Honeymoon Effect, is really an understanding of how people unconsciously took control of their lives when they fell in love with somebody. And that honeymoon experience that I write about, which is after you fall head over heels in love with somebody, how your life is like heaven on earth. You're healthy, you're energized, everything is so beautiful and wonderful, no matter how bad it was until you met that person. But once you meet this person, fall in love, all of a sudden it's heaven on earth. And the whole book and story is this was not an accident, this was a personal creation. And if you know how you did it, then the key is that you can make this a way of life every day of your life for as long as you live on this beautiful planet.
So talk about, and I want to go into the honeymoon effect in a little bit, but I just want to go just to little basics, just because every time you say it, I just love hearing you tell it, is talk about the conscious versus subconscious, because that is so powerful, and that is so eye-opening for anybody who's not even aware of all this.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's kind of fun because when I give the lectures these days, I always put in there a picture of the marquee, movie poster for the movie The Matrix. And most people have seen that movie, and they talk about how we've been programmed, and that if you take this red pill, you can get out of the program. And what's interesting is I tell people, well, if you look for this video in the video store, it's under science fiction, but I said, in real truth, it's a documentary. We've all been programmed, and our life is an expression of the program.
Yeah.
And the honeymoon effect is what happens when you actually got out of the program is how you created the honeymoon. So let's quickly go into this. It's like, first story, very simple. Let's go back to the research and then move it forward. And the research was this. I took stem cells, which are embryonic cells, put them in a petri dish, and the culture medium in which the cells grow, cells are like fish. They have to live in an aquarium, and I make this culture medium. And we make the culture medium to try and match the blood that the cells from the organism where the cells come from to sort of make them feel at home, more or less, and put them in this culture medium that we synthesize. And by changing the composition of the culture medium in the dish, I can change the fate of the cells. Well, this is really interesting. A lot of people say, well, that's really great, Bruce. You got cells in a plastic dish, and you change the culture medium, and you change the fate of the cells. But what does it have to do with me as a human? And then the joke part, which I think is kind of fun, is I say, you look in the mirror, you see yourself looking back, and you say, oh, there's a single organism, a human being. In this case, I look in there. There's Bruce, a single organism. And I go, well, this is a great misperception. Because in truth, a human body is made out of about 50 trillion cells. The cells are the living entity. The human, just by actual definition, is a community of 50 trillion cells. So the joke is, a human being is the equivalent of a skin-covered petri dish, inside of which we have 50 trillion cells, and we have the culture medium called blood. And so then comes down to the bottom line. It says, well, what controls the fate of the cells? So I say, well, whether the cell's in a plastic dish or a skin-covered human dish, the cells still respond to the culture medium composition. And in the case of the cells in the body, that's the blood. And then we say, okay, finally, big question, since the composition of the blood controls the fate of the cells, then what controls the composition of the blood? I go, well, the brain is the physical chemist. The brain releases chemistry into the blood that controls the fate of the cells. And I go, yeah, but which chemicals should the brain release? And the answer is based on, very simply, the mind. It's the perception of the mind that determines the chemistry released in the blood. So, for example, if you open your eyes and you see someone you love, you release into the blood things like dopamine, vasopressin, growth hormone, oxytocin. These are wonderful chemicals that come from love. And, in fact, if you put those same chemicals in a plastic petri dish, the cells grow exuberantly well. And hence, when people fall in love, they glow, and they're so healthy. Is why? Because the chemistry coming from a brain in love encourages great health. And I say, wait, same person all of a sudden sees something they fear. I go, oh, well, the brain doesn't release the chemicals of love. Now it releases stress hormones, inflammatory agents. And I go, well, why is that relevant? Because I say, if you take the chemistry released from a brain in fear and put it into a plastic petri dish, you actually kill the cells. So now we're down to a question as well, what chemistry as individuals are we releasing into the body through the blood that is controlling our cells? I go, well, the mind. And then I go, well, yeah, but there's two parts to the mind, and they're interdependent. They work in different fashions, and most importantly, they learn in different ways. We have the conscious and the subconscious. The latest evolution of our nervous system, conscious, is the part of the brain that deals with us as individuals. So the conscious mind, which is really largely involved with a lump of tissue right behind your forehead called the prefrontal cortex, this is the seat of consciousness. It's the seat of our personal identity. It's the seat of our spiritual connection, who we are as individuals. And it's a very creative mind. And this is what makes or gives the opportunity for humans to rise above all the other animals, because Our brain can take information and create new information and new ideas as compared to lower animals that operate primarily from what we call the subconscious, which we also have the subconscious. The subconscious is more of a habit mind. You learn something once, and then it's programmed into the subconscious. You don't have to relearn it every day, which is a great benefit, even though a lot of people think the subconscious mind is this evil thing. No, it's not. It's a great resource of programs. So the subconscious is neither good or bad. It's the programming in the subconscious, if you want to call that good or bad. And so basically the habits that we acquire in life are in the subconscious. And most importantly, to hopefully round off this question and not for two more days, but the fact is this, the fundamental programs in the subconscious mind are not ours. We download them from observing the behavior of our parents, our family, and our community during the first 7 years of life. We download them unconsciously. The conscious mind's not really working as a predominant activity of the brain until after seven. And you say, well, why is that? And basically what I give in the lecture, I say, look, you go to the store, you buy a brand new iPod, and you take it out of the box, and that little wheel on the front of the iPod called the click wheel, you can use that to select a program and a playlist. It's a creative button, in a sense, like the conscious mind. So an iPod is like the mind. The little wheel on the front is the conscious creative mind. And I say, okay, brand new iPod, take it out of the box and push play. And nothing happens. And people say, of course nothing happens. You have to have a program in there before you can push play, before it does anything. And I go, a person when they're born, the mind is like an iPod. The conscious mind can't play anything because there's no programs. So the conscious mind doesn't kick in until after seven, because the first 7 years is to acquire programs. And you say, well, how do you acquire those programs? And that is, first 7 years of life, the mind, the subconscious mind is like a tape recorder, and in a state of hypnosis, essentially, recording other people's behaviors. And that becomes our foundational programming, the behaviors of others. Well, then you say, okay, but my conscious creative mind, the one that has wishes and desires, aspirations, the job that I want, the things I want to do, I go, yeah, that's the mind that allows us to create the beautiful life. And I say, well, here's an interesting fact, and that's this, that the conscious mind is also endowed with the ability to think. And the problem is, if you're thinking about something, then the conscious mind is shifted from paying attention into thought. So if I say, hey, Kate, what did you do last Thursday? And while we're standing here talking to each other, your conscious mind lets go of the current moment as it goes back in time to review what you did last Thursday. Or even the other way, I say, what are you doing next Monday? And your conscious mind lets go of the current moment as you start thinking about what you're going to do Monday. Or something simple like, hey, Kate, think about this. And the moment your mind starts thinking, the conscious mind gets engaged. Well, here's the point. When the conscious mind is engaged with thinking, by definition, it's not paying attention. And that's when we default into the programs of the subconscious. And so now it turns out here's what the biggest issue.
Hello?
I really wanted to create this great success, and I want to have a wonderful life, and I want to be successful. And I go, yeah, that's conscious mind. That's really good. And then the statistics come from science that is a little flooring, because it says, because the mind, the conscious mind is capable of thinking, and it does so 95% of the day, that means in truth, 95% of the day the conscious mind is not paying attention, and therefore 95% of the day we are playing programs that we got in the subconscious. And I go, yeah, but the fundamental programs in your subconscious came from other people. And as a result, doesn't satisfy your wishes and desires. And psychologists will tell us 70% of the programs that we acquire during that first seven-year period are negative, disempowering, self-sabotaging. And then you go, oh, but I would know if I was sabotaging myself. And then in the lecture, I give the story, and everyone laughs because they're familiar with it. I say, look, I know in the past you were close to a friend. You knew your friend's behavior very, very well. And one day you notice that your friend has some of the same behavior as their parent, and then you casually volunteer the wonderful little statement such as, hey, you know, Bill, you're just like your dad. And then you back away from Bill, because he goes ballistic saying, how can you compare me to my dad? And everyone laughs because they're familiar with it. And I go, well, there's two profound points, one story, profound point number one. Everyone else can see that Bill behaves like his dad. The only one who doesn't see it is Bill. And the reason is simple, and that is, why is he playing his dad's behavior? A, because he was programmed with it before he was seven. B, because when he's thinking about something, he defaults to this program, plays a behavior, but he doesn't see it. He doesn't see it because why? His conscious mind's busy thinking. So the behavior that's playing is invisible. And so it turns out 95% of our day, and this is a profound point too, all of us are Bill. 95% of the day, we are operating from programs in the subconscious mind, and we're not observing it. And if these programs, as the majority are dysfunctional or disabling or disempowering, then 95% of the day we're sabotaging our lives, and we are the last ones to even know we're involved with it because we didn't see it. And I say, well, what does that mean to the individual? I say, well, we feel like victims. I had a great desire to go out and be successful in my job today, and I come home at the end of the day beaten, tired, not getting anywhere, and then I'm left to think, well, I went forward with great wishes, and so the universe must be against me. Invisible forces, fate, whatever, is not supporting me. And now it turns out, oh, my God, it was 95% of the day that we were sabotaging ourselves. We were shooting ourselves in the foot with bad programming. And at the end of the day, look at this bloody foot and go, where the heck did that come from? And so I'm sorry I was so winded on this, Kate. But,
this is so important. That's why I wanted you to talk about it, because this is the life-altering stuff, and it needs to be said. But also what I think is almost like a parody, I mean, until you really understand all this, is it's almost like a kind of a joke that 95% of the time you aren't even you.
Exactly. But you don't know it because the you is often thinking about what you really want while you're sabotaging everything you want in front of you, because your real you is in thought, and the functional you is playing old programs. That's the movie The Matrix. We're in these programs, and as I said, the vast majority are negative and disempowering, and they're invisible. That's where the part that is scary. And so we sabotage ourselves without seeing it, and they're only left to perceive ourselves as victims of a life gone wild without your control. And in fact, no, you controlled every bit of it.
Yeah, I know, and that's what's so cool, because once you start down that pathway of learning, then you learn how you can start shifting things. But it's really super overwhelming when you realize that, you know, the percentages and just the fact of how much of how easy it is to give up, really, like how we were talking about earlier about empowerment, just to give it all up and give it up to your pre-programming.
And it's invisible, because if you have to add the invisible part, because that's the part that shocks us when we realize that, well, I made an effort to be successful, and it didn't work. And I go, well, you made an effort about 5% of the time, and 95% of the time, the programming you got was disempowering, so you'll never get to that end.
Well, exactly. And the thing that hit me so much the first time I ever heard you speak, and probably for most people in my class too, is that all of a sudden realizing, like when we used to say things, or I used to say things like, well, you know, I've always done it this way, or that's how it always happens for me, and just thinking that was a pattern I was always going to be in my entire life, that certain things were destined to kind of be certain ways, and realizing that, wait a minute, I can actually shift it, that I don't have to follow.
Yeah, until you realize that, though, then you by definition, you see no other escape except victim. There's
exactly.
No other, oh my God, it wasn't me, I'm a victim. But the moment you say you're a victim is the moment you're acknowledging disempowerment, because that's what victim means.
Yeah.
And it's quite unfortunate. And it's interesting, because a lot of people will say, well, look, okay, Bruce, you say I've been programmed for 7 years, and especially, actually, the program started even before you were born. Last trimester of pregnancy, you're being programmed through your mother's response to the world. And why this becomes relevant, people say, well, hell, I wasn't there in the sense of consciousness when the programming was going on. Like I say, well, what did you learn at 1 year old? And you go, I don't even know where I was at 1 year old. And I go, yeah, but your sub subconscious has programmed that. And then just to be helpful to people, because they say, well, do I need to go like through psychoanalysis to find out what my programs are because I wasn't there? And I go, no, here's the exciting news about that. 95% of your life comes from the subconscious. So basically, your life is a printout of your subconscious programming. And what this really means is simply this. Look at your life right now at this moment and say, anything that you like that comes to you, anything that you know that, oh, I enjoy this part and it's easy for me to get it, and it comes to me, recognize you have a program that encourages that. And then, on the other hand, say this, anything you work hard for, anything you put an effort into, anything you have to sweat over, anything you're making an urgent effort to try to make something happen, I say, why are you working so hard? Why is it so hard for you to acquire this? And I'm working at it. And I go, yeah, but here's the issue. Anything in your life that is difficult for you to get to, and it's a desire and a wish, a reflection of a program that doesn't support your desired destination. So basically,
it says, I'm working hard.
One more time. Yes.
That's huge. That's huge.
Yeah, it's very huge. It says this. Anything, things come easy to you? I go, yeah. Anything that comes easy to you, it comes easy because you have a program that encourages that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you work hard at, anything that you fail at and you're trying to get to, is a reflection of the fact that while your conscious mind is trying to go this way, you have subconscious programs that do not support that end. And that's why we're working so hard. We're not working hard to overcome the universe. We're working hard to overcome our own programming. So basically it says you need to go to find out who did what to who. When I was a kid, my mom did this, and then my dad did that. And, you know, people go to analysis and with boxes of tissue cry through a repetition of their life story. And I go, Look, you're really just killing the messenger over the message. Whoever, let's say your mom did this, and I go, well, yeah, your mom may have done that, but what's really important is what did you learn as a consequence of your mom doing that?
Yeah,
so if
exactly.
you go beat up your mom, you never
yeah.
change the consequence. So
yeah.
the whole movement is to move away from blame and say, my life it works this way really well. My life doesn't work this way. Why? And the answer is, the programs in my subconscious do not support that, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, then it's easy. I don't have to change my whole life. I just have to change those parts that stand out as elusive, things that I can't get to, and say, those issues are what my subconscious programs are not supporting. And then immediately you have a place to focus so you can rewrite and change those issues.
That's right, and the decisions that you made at 4 years old when you saw your mother or father do something, and realizing that you can actually change those decisions.
Oh, absolutely, and if it didn't, you know, this would be a really lousy phone call because then I say, well, okay, thanks, Kate, everybody, I'm sorry, your life is finished, that's it.
Move along.
But no, we can change the program, but then here comes the issue. There are two minds, the conscious mind, which is creative, and the subconscious mind, which is by definition primarily habits, repeating programs. And I go, well, not only do their functions differ, but how they learn is profoundly different, meaning this. A conscious creative mind, by its definition, is creative. And I say, well, how does a creative mind learn? I say, you could read a self-help book. And you go, yeah, I read these self-help books, and I really get, oh, my God, those are great. I understand what I can do, and I've read the book, and my life is still exactly the same. I go, yeah, for this reason. The conscious mind, being creative, can pick up the data right away from reading the book. The subconscious mind, which is habitual, does not learn that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you educate the conscious mind, and you've never touched the programming in the subconscious mind. Basically, it says, well, during the 5% of the day when you're operating from conscious mind, you will use this new information and it will advance and help your life. But unfortunately, you're only using it 5% of the day, so whatever you read is not affecting 95% of your life, which is still the same old program. So the creative conscious mind, being creative, I said, read a book, go to a lecture, watch a video. Even this, the conscious mind can go, aha, I got it. And now that's new information. So you can reprogram the conscious mind instantly, in a sense. But I say, what about the subconscious? I go, The subconscious does not learn that way. It's a much more stable, structured mind for a very simple reason. These are habits, and you don't want to change your habits every afternoon because it would mess up your life, because then nothing will be, you know, like everything would change every day. So
yeah.
The habit mind holds on to a habit for a good reason. If you want to change it, you're really going to have to do something. It's not going to change just by accident. I heard something on TV and my life changed. Not necessarily. And so I said, well, how does the subconscious mind learn? This is very critical. A lot of people think the two minds are connected, and that's the biggest problem in the world, in the sense that if my conscious mind learns something, then my subconscious mind should know it too. And it goes, nope, not at all. You educate the conscious mind, the subconscious mind still got the original program in it. And so basically, the two minds don't learn in exactly the same way. And this is also a problem, is when people, and we do this every now and then, we catch ourselves being like our mother or our father, very embarrassing to most. It's like, oh, no, God, I just did my mother. and then we say, oh, now you caught yourself, and you say, oh, I'm going to give myself a good talking to and say, don't do that again. Or, you know, my favorite one is because I used to love donuts, and Margaret, my love, brought the concept of donuts. She called them circles of death. And, you know, to avoid me, it's like, don't eat the donuts, right? And then so I'm having in my mind, don't eat the donuts. And then sure enough, 20 minutes later, I'm standing there with a donut in my hand eating this donut. And at that moment, feeling so, you know, bad about myself because, you stupid idiot, you're eating a donut and you know you shouldn't eat it. And the silly part is, it doesn't stop me. I finish the donut.
Right.
And feel very badly about it. And the whole issue about that is that I get upset with myself. And a lot of people get upset with themselves because they see themselves repeating these behaviors. And even though they say, I know better than that, and I'm still doing it. And then they talk to themselves not really nicely, like, you idiot, you shouldn't have done that. And then I laugh about it because it's like, okay, you saw your subconscious did this bad programming, and then you're talking to yourself and telling the subconscious, don't do that. And it doesn't work. And I tell you why. Because you are an entity in your conscious mind, but the subconscious mind is like a cold machine. It just records and plays back programs. So it's sort of like an old-fashioned tape player. I say there's a program in the tape player. You push play, the program's running. You see the program or hear the program. You don't like it. And then I say, okay, talk to the tape player for a little bit. And you say, tape player, stop playing that program. Don't play that program. And I go, well, how much talking to the tape player will it be until the tape player stops playing the program? And the answer is, you'll talk to your blue in the face, and it'll never change. Why? There's nobody in there. There's nobody in the subconscious. So getting mad at yourself is actually really bad because it just makes you feel bad, and yet it has no effect on the programming. So we have to say, how does the subconscious learn? And once you understand how it learns, then you have access to rewrite the program. If you don't do the process that the subconscious mind learns with, then you're not changing the program. So how does it learn? Three ways. Number one, first 7 years of programming, the brain was operating in a lower frequency than consciousness. It was operating in EEG, electroencephalograph frequency, called theta. Theta is is imagination. That's what kids 1 through 7 express in their lives. They mix the real world, the imaginary world, and it's a way of brain function, but theta is also hypnosis. So how did I learn the thousands of facts as a child that I needed to learn to become a functional member of a family and a community? I learned them by just having hypnosis. I watched everybody else, downloaded what they did, and when I play it back, I play what they did. So the fundamental programs of subconscious are just playback of other people's behavior, not yours. But if you want to change it, one of the primary ways of changing is hypnosis, because that's how you learned it. So the use of like subliminal tapes as you go to bed is very effective because the mind goes through theta from passing between the awake state, which is an EEG alpha and beta, higher frequencies, and then as you go to sleep, you go into delta, the lowest frequency. And so as you're passing from consciousness and you're going into sleep where you're just nodding off, really, the brain is slipping into theta. That was the frequency of hypnosis. So if you put earphones on as you're going to bed, during your transition from awake to into deep sleep, you pass through theta, you'll be downloading the data into the subconscious. So that's number one. Number two, after you're seven, you still learn things in your subconscious. So how'd you learn things? And the answer is repetition. Remember going the ABCs, and how many times did you have to go ABCD until you could get to Z without making a mistake? Well, you repeated it, and you repeated it, and you repeated it, and then you got it. And once you got it, you never had to do it again because now it's a program. You learned how to walk when you were an infant. Once you learned how to walk, the subconscious programmed it, so you don't even have to think about walking. It's an automatic program. So basically it says, oh, after seven, the way of changing a program is repetition. And so that means you do something on a habitual basis. I always love to add this because a lot of people think, well, sticky notes on the mirror or on the refrigerator are ways of learning. And I go, no. They're wishes. These are things you wish for. And I say, why aren't they ways of learning? Because there's no habit, no process. It's just every now and then I look at the mirror and go, oh, yeah, there's that little note. Don't eat the donut. And basically that is not habituation. Habituation is repetition. And it's done on a regular basis. Whatever it is you want to change, you do it on a regular basis. So habituation is the second way that the brain, the subconscious learns. And the third way is most exciting because that's the work you're involved with, Kate. And it's really involving what we call belief change modifications or energy psychology processes. What these collectively represent are a concept called super learning. And super learning is the ability to push the record button on the mind and make a download virtually instantaneously so that you can change programs very, very, very quickly with a super learning process. Each of them has a different access, but they all basically get to the same point. These modalities, the belief change or energy psychology, inevitably will get to the same point of rewriting. Anything other than that, oh, there's one more. Okay, the fourth one, which is not the one I suggest, but the fourth
one
is
scaring me.
A profound something that happens in your life and shatters your vision of life, something profound. Usually it's not very positive, but it's so profound and life-threatening in some case or so rip you up in some case that from one experience, you won't do that again. And so there is that degree of the fourth one, which is not the one I highly recommend, but, boys, it's really fast. Something that is so shocking that after that experience, you will not play the old program again. So those are the four ways. The easiest, fastest, least effort are the belief change, energy, psychology, tapping, things like that, because they're the most effective and direct without a lot of pain involved.
Exactly. That's why I love it.
Yes.
So let me ask you something. I have like a zillion questions for you, but knowing, let's kind of talk, based on what you're talking about, the subconscious versus conscious and all that, and now kind of taking it up a level to kind of pulling into what you wrote about in the honeymoon effect.
Yes.
Where does all this apply? So I'm kind of like fast-forwarding a teeny bit, but how does all this apply to personal responsibility? What I mean by that is if you're in a relationship, for example, because that's what you really focused on honeymoon effect and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of people talk about, you should still be, understanding kind of what's important to you and just focusing on that. And if other people like it, great. If they don't, tough, wish them well and let them move on. And other people have the philosophy like, wait a minute, you're part of a community. You need to find out what works with everybody and how to blend well. So I'm curious with your point of view, what you kind of think our personal responsibility is, whether it's a relationship or a friend or whatever, how that all applies.
Well, in this particular case, remember, most of our behavior is invisible. So if you're alone in the world and you're going out in the world, you step forward thinking, okay, I'm presenting the best of who I am to the world. And I go, 5% of the time, 95% of the time, you're expressing totally what your program is to be. And as I said, most of it's negative. So you think you're going out there trying to create a very positive impression, and you're not getting the results you're looking for. And you seem to be more or less alienated. And you can't, what the heck is wrong here? I'm really putting my best foot forward. And it turns out, 5% of the time, and the rest, 95%, invisibly, you are playing programs that are sabotaging you with nobody in your world to respond to you in an honest and caring way, you will continue to do this every day for the rest of your life and only at the end be very sorry about the fact that it never really worked out. But when you get part of a relationship or part of a community, which is a relationship, then if they're real friends and real community and you are aware of what I'm talking about, then when they say, if they're a real friend, they say, you know, you really, that behavior that you just expressed was really not, you know, supportive of what you were intending to do. If you're aware that you have invisible behavior and somebody brings it up, now there's a moment of like, oh, illumination. Oh, my God, I didn't see I was doing that. And then every time you correct a negative behavior, like, oh, I did it again, basically, every time you stop, you saw it and you stop, what are you doing? Making a new habit. That's what's happening. And so every time you become aware and you stop the old behavior and replace it with a desired behavior, you are habituating, by definition, repetition, habituating a new program. So when you're in a community or a relationship and you're open to the reality, look, I'm truthful about myself. I know that 5% of the time I'm really expressing who I want to be, but I also now have to recognize that the majority of time I'm playing these programs and they're invisible. So if someone tells them to me, they're not mad at me. They're not criticizing me like, okay, you know. They're informing me that invisibly I was doing something that was sabotaging my end goal. In that case, then you look at it differently. It's not a person criticizing you. It's a person helping you. And if you had no idea you needed help, then it looks like, no, that person's criticizing me. And I go, no, we are all playing these programs. And so when it becomes, when it's reflected back, not the times that you catch it yourself, which are infrequent, but the more frequent times when it's invisible and then reflected back by others, what are you given? You're given an opportunity to say, oh, my God, the behavior I just did wasn't really supporting. What do I need to do? Change behavior? Well, how do I do that? Right now, institute what you want. And you say, yeah, but that's not going to change it. And I go, not the first time, but the second, third, fourth time that it comes back to you and you say, oh, wrong program, I want this, you are manifesting a new habit. And so instead of criticism, it is a guide to allow you to say, to see the invisible and change the negative aspect of that invisible programming.
But, Bruce, what about people who aren't self-aware? That, you know, or
there's
maybe
problem.
The problem is, but they're going to look at it, yeah, they're going to look at it like, oh, I'm just being criticized, and then they're not going to want to change.
Exactly.
Right?
You know, in the Honeymoon Effect book, I talk about this, and I get a little checklist, and one of the checklists is, it's very important, it says, in a relationship, both members of the relationship have to be aware of exactly what I'm talking about for this reason.
Yeah.
If one is aware and the other is not aware, the one who's not aware sees every critical remark as criticism, and you know, you're a bad person, and the person who's aware is going, oh, instruction, awareness, oh, I didn't see I was doing this, and that's the whole difference in the world. If it's criticism and I believe they're mad at me, then I sink deeper into my shell and actually reinforce the negative behavior. But if I open up because of I'm aware of, oh, my God, I have been doing this unconsciously, then this is the greatest opportunity in the world, because now you have an opportunity to say, do you want to continue that behavior or do you want to do something different? And that's the freedom moment.
It is.
Hello?
No, it is, but you know, no. I'm just thinking about what you're saying, because I think to some people that would be like, oh, my God, that is awesome. But I think some people would also be freaked out of their mind and totally scared.
Absolutely,
you know, because if they've always been doing things certain ways, that probably would totally get them out of their comfort zone.
That's right, and because it's a habit, that automatically, as you just said, they've always been doing it that way.
Yeah.
And yet when it's invisible, and if you're unaware of that you are doing this, you are shocked. I mean, it's sort of like when I give the lecture, I talk about, look, the honeymoon effect is an experience in your life where you go back to that time you first fell head over heels in love with somebody. The first period of it could last a week, if you're lucky, a month, you know, a few months with this honeymoon before life turns back into more of a regular experience. But there's this very exciting part of this relationship where, oh, my God, this is so beautiful. I'm living this wonderful life, heaven on earth. And I go, and the reason why, because science has found out that when we fall in love like that, we don't default to the subconscious mind. We keep our conscious mind present for a very simple reason. If everything you wanted, this individual or whatever it is, your job, it doesn't have to be a person, it could be a job, a career, or everything, comes to you and it's like, oh my God, I'm so excited. You keep your conscious mind in the attention of it. In other words, if you meet, let's say, a person, and this person is all the things you were thinking about, why would you let your mind wander at the moment everything you wanted just came into your field? So It turns out, science revealed that one of the times in our lives where we don't default to the subconscious is when we fall deeply in love like that. Why is that relevant? Because the answer is this. Up until then, 5% from your creative mind, 95% from the subconscious. Creative mind, wishes, desires, and aspirations. And I say, oh, I just fell in love with this person. Well, that means when you're with that person, you're not operating only 5% of the time with your creative mind. You're operating nearly 100% of the time. I go, why is that relevant? I said, well, imagine two people come together, and for the first times in their lives, they're not defaulting to subconscious programs. They're expressing wishes and desires. Well, expression of wishes and desires between two people is heaven on earth. That's where the honeymoon comes from. And I say, yeah, but inevitably the honeymoon disappears. And I go, why does it disappear? And the answer is because life still gets busy. Even though you're falling in love with somebody, you still have to pay the rent, fix the car, do the chores, whatever it is. And I go, well, why is that relevant? Because the moment you, let's say you're in this loving relationship, and you're heaven on earth, everything is great, and at this particular moment, you really are thinking about, oh, this work I have to do, and your conscious mind is now where? Not present. It's thinking about the work you have to do. And your loving partner, which you've had this great honeymoon relationship with, comes up, asks you a simple loving question, and then you turn around and go, blah, blah, blah. And they look at you, and I love this line because it's almost a universal line. Your partner looks at you in disbelief and goes, who are you? Like this new person showed up. Where did this person come from? And I go, when my conscious mind was busy thinking and I started to play my subconscious programming, that isn't me. That's my father or my combination of my father, my mother, my family, the behavior I learned from them. So why is that relevant? Because my partner comes up, asks a loving question. I turn around, blah, blah, blah. She looks at me and says, who are you? Now, this is where the problem comes from because I slipped out of my conscious mind. Now I'm playing a tape. But when I played the tape, I didn't see it. Relevance. My partner looks at me, who are you? And then I'm thinking, what are you talking about? I've always been myself. I don't know what you're talking about. Because I didn't even see what I did. This is when two people are not aware of their subconscious programming. And then the result of that is, guess what? Well, the more thinking that comes in the relationship, the more I start playing the subconscious programs, the more, let's say, introduce my father's behavior into the relationship. Well, I started out with my relationship with this other person from conscious mind, and it devolves into a relationship where only 5% of the time am I using the mind that created the honeymoon. Now I'm playing my father's behavior. Well, there's a lot of negative things in there. And as a result, my partner has to decide, do I want to stay in this relationship or not? Because this behavior is just showing up from somewhere, and your partner doesn't see they're playing that behavior, and then you have to compromise and go, well, I guess this is part of our relationship. Well, if it wasn't really wonderful, by definition, you compromise, and you compromise by meaning you are giving up heaven on earth because you're going to accept this negative behavior because that's just part of the relationship. And every time a compromise comes in, you just are chipping away from that honeymoon experience and becoming more normal life experiences at that point. There's an issue for most people. They reach the compromises that are just too many and go, I can't be in this relationship anymore. They break up, and then there's this moment. It's like, well, how did something that started out so beautiful devolve into this? And the answer was, it started out with conscious wishes and desires and ended up with 95% programming from other people. And compromise is the problem. Because when we compromise, by definition, we are agreeing to give up wishes and desires. And that is when the honeymoon really falls apart. But if both partners are aware of what we are talking about, and the negative behavior shows up, rather than my partner freaking out, going, who are you? What's all this about? it turns into a conversation. It says, well, you didn't see, perhaps, that the behavior you were just playing was a reflection of other people's programming, not what you really want. And if both people are aware, then I could receive that understanding going, oh, my God, I didn't see I did that. And now that I stopped it, that's once. If it shows up again, which it most likely will, and I stop it again, that's twice. And if it shows up again the third time and I stop it again, what I'm doing is what? Creating a new habit that says when that behavior starts to show up, the mind learns, don't play that behavior.
Yeah.
And what I've done over repetition is eliminate that from the program so that my relationship doesn't have to experience that invisible sabotage. And think about it this way, because here's the net result, which is because we can rewrite the program, think about this. What if I rewrote the negative aspects, the parts that I struggle with in my life, and put in there programs that give me the encouragement to proceed and experience what I really want? If I replace the negative programs with those positive programs so that my subconscious mind has programs that match my wishes and desires and aspirations, what would be the consequence? And the answer is this. You'd have a honeymoon experience every day of your life, because the moment your mind would wander and you defaulted into the subconscious, it would still play the exact same program of wishes and desires. And all of a sudden you realize then whether you're conscious or not conscious after that time, the behaviors are still going to support the honeymoon and the quality of life that we all seek on this planet.
Well, absolutely. And also, too, you wouldn't just have it in your relationship, but I'm sure you'd have it everywhere in your life.
Everywhere. It's not just a relationship. A job
yeah.
is a relationship.
Well, exactly.
and this is
your
very
clients,
critical.
All that, yeah.
Absolutely. And this is, you know, it's very unfortunate because, let's say, in a job, when somebody applies for a job and they show up for the job interview, they're going to be totally conscious because their boss or whoever is going to ask them questions, interview them, and the answers are going to come from where? Conscious mind. This is who I wish to be. This is who I desire to be. This is my intention to what I'm going to offer you on the job. And the employer and the interviewed employee agree, like, wow, this is great for the company. This is really wonderful. And then I go, yeah, but then, you know, shortly after you join the company, just like in a relationship, you start, you know, operating more from the subconscious. Well, the behaviors in the subconscious may not match any of the things you told your employer about.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, you are invisibly sabotaging yourself because your employer is observing you and you're not observing you. And as a result, they see and they go, oh, my God, this person isn't working for the team. And,
yep.
and your conscious mind, of course I'm working for the team, but I say, yeah, but you're not operating from your conscious mind. And that's when the job falls apart. And that's when the intentions and wishes that you were seeking on that job fall apart. And it's invisible. And that's when we say, oh, I don't know what happened. This job just didn't work out. It's sort of like, well, perhaps you threw a monkey wrench in that you didn't see. And if you could have a relationship like with an individual partner could say, you know, this behavior really isn't good, and you don't respond by, like in most people, if they criticize you, your response is to wall yourself off. Criticism is an attack. And if it's an attack, by definition, you require protection. So when you hear these negative critical things about yourself, rather than responding to them like, I didn't know I was doing that, we sink in deeper inside and wall ourselves off and go, well, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. It's sort of like, then you're not working together anymore at that point.
But in your book, The Honeymoon Effect, I'm just trying to remember, Bruce, because as I recall, Margaret was kind of a heroine that she kind of pulled you, you know, because in the beginning, didn't it take you a little bit of time to all of a sudden come to this place?
Oh, yeah, because I, look, you know,
I was
learning as I was going along with all this. And before meeting Margaret, 17 years before meeting Margaret, I was married once for 10 years and totally unaware of everything we're talking about. Totally just like the average guy on the street, got into this relationship too young. The whole thing didn't really work out. 10 years, it's just a very emotionally draining divorce with my two young daughters and all that kind of stuff. I got out of that, and I said to myself, well, I never, ever want to get in that situation again. And every day when I would shave, every stroke of the razor, I had a mantra: I'll never get married again. I'll never get married again. And then when I met Margaret, and it was interesting because when I first met Margaret, and I said, well, if you're looking for a permanent relationship, don't look for me because I'm never going to get married again. And I said, but, you know, if we have a wonderful time today, we'll likely go out tomorrow and have a wonderful time. And if we have a wonderful time tomorrow, we'll probably go out the next day. And so basically, as long as we're having a great time, let's go out. It didn't offer any long-term kind of vision, which is different between men and women because genetically women are predisposed to say, look, they are, you know, in some sense, unconscious programming about having children is that, well, if you're going to have a child, you have to protect and nurture and take care of that child for so many years, 13 or 14 or years at least, until they're free and independent enough. And so a woman, by unconscious programming, is really looking for a very long-term thing. And hearing about short-term thing is not that of interest. And yet the issue was, at some point, Margaret had to look at the situation and go, you know, okay, listen, Bruce, you know, let's do this day by day. But if I meet somebody that I see a long-term relationship, then I'm going to go. And I said, fine, Margaret, that's really cool. But what was so interesting for me is because when she gave up the long-term plan and decided, look, every day was beautiful. Every day was the day we're alive. Every day is right now. If right now is great, then let's continue right now. And it was so exciting because she shifted from long-term vision into enjoying the immediacy of now. And that's what most people fail to understand because they're so preoccupied with what's down the end? Where's this going to go? Tell me, you know, the end point, which could be 10, 20 or more years from now. And in that process, letting go of what was happening at the very moment. Because you're alive right now. If it's great, that's great. And it was so funny because every time we used to go on a date, there was like a preamble. I'd start every date with, look, Margaret, if you're looking for a long-term relationship, I'm not really this guy. After a while, she just finally got mad at me. She says, I heard that so many times. I don't need to hear that anymore. She just said, do you want me here or not? I said, of course. And the fun part was when she started to really look at enjoying the moment, she was so attractive to me that it was like I was sitting on the floor and she was on the couch behind me, and I was just, the thought conscious mind was wandering, the conscious mind thought was thinking, I was going to turn around and say, Margaret, will you marry me? And a thought came into my head after 17 years of mantra, I'll never get married again, and I started to laugh because I can't believe I'm even thinking that thought. And she heard me laughing. She said, what are you laughing? I said, I can't tell you. She said, tell me. I said, I can't tell you. She said, she said, tell me. So I said, okay. I turned around to look at her, and I said, Margaret, will you marry me? And she just blew me off going, yeah, right. And I had to, you know, do this for a week before the reality of the fact was that I thought this relationship, because both of us knew about behavior, both of us knew about the programming. Both of us knew that we could communicate with each other about the programming and not see it as criticism, but as being helpful information. And in that result, the relationship between both of us resulted in us both rewriting subconscious programming to the extent that every day was like this honeymoon. And now, thank goodness, I've passed this 18-year mark of being with Margaret and still on the honeymoon every day, because those sabotaging programs that would have blown the thing out of the water were worked on, discussed, brought to the, you know, open to the surface, dealt with, and rewritten to realize, my God, that heaven on earth experience that we had was what we created, and if we want to do that, we can do that if we rewrite the programming, and we have.
But I just love that, sir. And I just want to make sure everyone, if you join late, Bruce's website is brucelipton.com. So it's brucelipton.com.
Yes.
Hey, Bruce, can I ask you one last question? And I
you
just like
to
talk to you.
You can ask me any question, Kate.
Okay. Just because to kind of wrap up, and this is like a serious question for you. And first of all, and also thank
serious.
You.
Oh, serious.
And by the way, thank you for sharing the story about you and Margaret. That was just lovely. And I got lots of ahas from it. So. not some I didn't really want to hear, but thank you for that.
Okay, I'm ready for serious.
Okay, so I talk with my clients a lot about success, and I'm just curious, how do you interpret success? What does that mean to you?
Success means that I wake up every day and I see the world as an opportunity, a very positive opportunity. I have no idea what the future is going to bring, but I look forward to it. And when there are negative things that show up, they're no longer negative to me. They're just, I didn't, the universe was always guiding me. And when things didn't work, I always used to be upset with the universe. Oh, it didn't work the way I wanted it. And I'd force the universe generally to get to that end that I wanted. And the joke was inevitably when I got to that end fighting the universe and I said, yeah, I got what I wanted. I turned around. It was not exactly what I wanted. Matter of fact, the universe was trying to tell me all the time, this is not the destination. And I was like insistent that it was. So I let go. I let go and I wake up every day like, I don't know, what the day is going to be, but it's not going to rock me in my relationship with Margaret for sure. I sleep like a baby at night. The universe, because I've been working in harmony with it, I started to realize that as I work in harmony with the universe, it all comes back. You're rewarded by working in harmony with the universe. And one of the things, just a little secret that I realized in the process that was, oh my God, it was so important. And that is this. Sometimes we have a voice that tries to tell us, oh, don't do that. And we ignore those voices because we've been programmed not to listen to those kind of things. And then we go ahead and do whatever, whatever we were going, not listening to the voice. And it comes from your heart, more or less. And I realize, boy, after all these years, when that little voice says, this isn't right, or do something different, I have finally learned to say, oh, my God, follow that voice. Because I've learned out through my entire life that every time I've ignored that little voice that was my, I don't know where it is, what it is, conscious mind, spiritual source, whatever it was, that I found that it was almost always telling me the right thing. And my training, my programming, what I learned from others almost inevitably clashes with that little voice. And I've always then followed the learning rather than listening to the voice. And now I realize, no. Your spirit and your voice in you knows what it wants and where what to do with it. When you compromise that, you are compromising yourself. And I follow the wisdom and intelligence of that voice, and the result is what? I'm happy. I'm happy all the time. Even when things go wrong, it's sort of like in the old days, when something went wrong, it meant that myself and the universe were not in alignment and that the universe was off. Now I see when things don't go right, so I wasn't in alignment with the universe, and I was the one that was not learning. So I open to the universe and open to these things as lessons that the universe is trying to teach me, and rather than me demanding what I want, I say, oh, okay, I'm open to it. And so what is success? I'm healthy. I'm happy. I'm doing well. I have, a community of loving people such as yourself around me. The people that used to be in my life that were negative and draining and pulling me in the wrong direction, they're not there. And I feel buffered by all the community around me that I feel very reassured that even if, if I lost everything, I wouldn't be on the street. I have so many wonderful supporting friends and loving friends that the fears that most people live by, they're not there. They're not there because it's like, whatever. Even if it comes down to oh, my God, I could lose my life in this, my understanding of spirituality, which was not my scientific background training, but which is something I acquired, has given me this joy of knowing about my spiritual existence, which is permanent forever. So my physical existence comes and goes, but I, as an entity, am immortal. When the fear of death is out of your life, it is like the opening of the gateway into the fields of love and happiness and joy. And most of us are programmed with fear, and fear is what? Chemically, the fear of our brain, of the consciousness in our brain, causes our cells to actually die because the chemistry released by fear kills cells. Letting go of the fear is really the freedom to fly. They always say, take a step off the edge, and then people say, oh, no, I'll fall. And then it's like, no, take a step off the edge, you'll fly. And I think that's something I've acquired. And I love my life. I love it. But I've certainly changed it. It's not the original programming that I came with.
Isn't that the best part, though?
Oh, my God. It's the exciting part. There's a negative side. I'll tell you what the negative side of being so much in love and living in heaven is that when life really sucked, it really dragged on. And when life started working so beautiful, it just disappeared. I know, like I just said, I've been with Margaret 18 years, and it seems like yesterday. So the negative side of loving life is the boys that go really fast.
No, it just puts a big smile on my face hearing you tell that story. So thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you for sharing so much really amazing, amazing information that I know is just like every time I hear it, it just totally gives me new ahas. It sends me in better direction, and I just appreciate it so much, and I have to imagine the listeners appreciate it just tremendously too.
Kate, I appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate the specifically the community of those that are listening as well, because for me what they represent are the cultural creatives. And the cultural creatives are those that are looking outside of the box for the answers. And I can tell you after all my life experiences, the answers were not inside the box at all. And we have to step outside. So I really want to honor the people that are online, because I know they're seeking answers, and they're looking in the right place. And so, again, as I started with, I very much appreciate being on this program, because when we start to see the answers that are much more effective, we can change ourselves, and by definition, we are supporting the evolution of this planet, which is right now we are going through a major evolutionary upheaval. So for most people looking out at the world, they're like, oh, my God, I'm afraid, fear, you know, the things are all changing and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going, I'm really glad they are, because science has revealed that the way we're living as a civilization on this planet is no longer sustainable, that we're actually facing our own extinction, and it's due to human behavior. So we want to survive and get through this. By definition, we cannot be doing the same old behaviors we've done for a couple of thousand years. Now it's time to move into a new world, and that's the world of self-empowerment. And that's the work that you do so beautifully, is to allow people to get out of their own limitations, because that is freedom, and that's where the future is going to be.
Absolutely. If I was religious, I'd say amen to that.
Hallelujah.
I'm a spiritual being, but this has just been so much fun. Will you come back again?
You know I would love to be on your show, Kate. So when you're ready and you have a space, I'll be filling it in, okay?
Perfectly. And I just want to give your website one last time before you go. It's brucelipton.com.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Bruce, and thank you everybody who was here. And I just can't wait to hear what kind of comments we get from the show, because I thought it was amazing. So thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Kate.
Bye, everybody. Bye, Bruce.
Bye.